here we are, episode 4 of Uncontroversial, where we are talking about unprovocative ministry wisdom for everyday ministry challenges. And I think it's our heart not to get controversial, not to get scary, not to try and point fingers, but just to sit down, chew the fat a little bit with a legend of the faith and try and work out, I guess, how can we help? How can we have a conversation that's going to empower you and make you a better leader, make you a better pastor? And so episode 4, we had a bit of fun with this one, but
yeah.
At the same time, talk about the stuff that is going to derail you, Dave. What are the things? What do you call this? Top 10?
Well, top 10, let's call it top 10 most common errors in leadership.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes leadership's like you think you need a bigger engine when actually you need the caravan behind you to be unhooked. You know, the problem is the wind restriction.
So I think if you can take out
a few things that, you know, a few of the universally common errors, then there's a natural flow, a natural momentum. It's just much easier. I think ministry's meant to be. It's always going to be difficult, right? But it's meant to be a little easier than most people experience.
Well, and I said, I think last episode, we're talking about how, you know, from a young age, I said, God, I want to learn the mistakes of other people so that I don't have to, you know, I haven't got time in my life to make the mistakes that I'm going to make and the mistakes other people have made in the past. You know what I mean? In my lifetime, I want to learn the mistakes of the history. You know, often said that, you know, the one thing that we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. But if we can learn from history, if we can make wise choices based on other people's mistakes, we're going to go a long way. So, righto, hit me up.
Well, I'd say, let me ask you, Rick.
Okay.
Right. If you thought of the universally, what do you think is in the top 10? What do you think's in my top 10?
See, this is good because I don't even know. One thing you got to understand about this podcast is that when Dave and I sit down, we've got a rough idea topic and we've got a whole bunch of things that we believe and know in our hearts and we just bounce off. We don't really super prepare for these things. So, and if you could see the pad, you might be on an audio podcast, not the video. But I'm looking at the pad that he's written these things down on, and his handwriting is worse than a doctor's. I cannot read any of them, so it's guesswork. Top 10. Look,
I think
if you said biggest one, I mean, I'm not going to get 10 off the top of my head, but I think the biggest one for me is that particularly when we get any level of success, it goes to our heads. And people allow the glory not to go to God, but actually starts to inflate their own ego.
Yeah.
And so somewhere along the line, that exposes you. And I say that in two words or less, pride. You know, I mean, I think ultimately it's pride, and it might not look prideful or arrogant on the outside, but we allow pride to creep in. And the opposite could also be true. We allow, you know, false humility to default, which is another form of pride.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I'm not really like that, but ultimately, we don't leave our heart healthy. We leave it unchecked.
Yeah, that's right. Generally, God allows a little explosion to take place, doesn't he? Like pride comes for a fall, and sometimes the fall is a few bricks falling down. You know, it can be the fall of something, can't it?
Depends how well known you are.
Yeah. Yes, but we all have a bit of a crumbling after pride. And then the Bible says humble yourself. So God can't humble you. God just allows a situation and then we humble ourselves. But I think that out of all the tests for Abraham, the last test was the death of what I call the funeral test, the death of a dream test. He had to let Isaac go because he loved him too much. He loved the promise more than the God of promise, loved the hand of God more than the heart of God. And then when he said, I'll give him up, God said, now I know that you love me.
Wow.
You know,
that didn't come off the top of my head. That was very good. That was deep.
What about if I did a top 10, which we're going to include ego in this?
You could start at number 6 and just call it number 1, and I'm not going to know the difference.
No, I know. I'm going to start at number 2 and call it number 1, right? What about promoting good people to a place of incompetence?
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. I think good people are good people, and when it comes to building a church, you start out small, it's a family. And so you can afford people to make mistakes because nobody else is relying on them. You give them a sense of responsibility, you give them the task to do whatever. If they don't do it, you'll just pick up the slack and do it yourself. But as an organization grows, Now that person, you give someone a task, you might be so busy yourself as a senior leader or a department leader that you don't have the chance to get back to that person. And if you can't trust them to do a great job, other people get hurt.
Yeah.
It's not just about the job didn't get done properly, but other people get hurt.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's a bit like if you, again, football model, right? Got someone who's good in the pub league.
Yeah.
And they look great in public, right? Strongly put them in Arsenal versus Chelsea, right? Oh, gee. They're going to – and because most people don't because of embarrassment, they tend not to say, I'm useless, right? What they tend to say is they point the finger back at the person who placed them in that team.
Yeah, you put me here.
Yes, which – and in one respect, a lot of mistakes that I see in other people, I've made that mistake. I've promoted them and placed them in a position that is too difficult for them. And so their embarrassment and then their friction that's caused from it and then unresolved conflict, right, is actually my problem with leadership. And what happens sometimes is you think, who are we going to put on eldership, right? You think, oh, so-and-so's been so faithful in stewarding. And then you put them in eldership. Or so-and-so's built a business that's now turning over $10 million a year.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll put them into eldership. Well, they're brilliant in business and the guy's brilliant in stewarding. And just because they're both slightly bored in what they're doing – then through boredom, we think, oh, we need to give them another challenge, right? Then we put them in eldership. And when the friction comes to a church, right, generally elderships prove themselves to not actually be elders because elders are shepherds, overseers of the flock, right? But if they haven't been looking at the flock during the good times and then when a crisis comes, they now look at the flock, well, gee, that's not eldership. It's not the eldership of the Bible, right? Yeah. And also, if they have no capacity of wisdom and capacity of multi-layered thinking, and the capacity to carry the pastoral heart of the church, then it's the problem of us inviting them into it only because of faithfulness. I think we exalt faithfulness because a lot of people are so unfaithful that when we find
somebody
faithful, we then make them associate pastor, make them, and I think then there's going to be a crisis when their life collapses.
It's interesting that you talk about, I think the key word of that is we appoint good people, you know, because we're not talking about fundamental mistakes of appointing bad people. I mean, hopefully we don't appoint bad people. That's just silly.
Yeah.
But sometimes you do appoint a bad person that you didn't realize was a bad person. That's why the Bible talks about being slow to appoint people to leadership, right? Give them a chance to prove themselves. But you can appoint a good person quickly.
Yes.
That it's more tempting.
Yes.
To appoint a good person quickly.
Brilliant.
And so I've learned this the hard way a couple of times as well, where you put someone in a role and they're a good person and you know that you should be slow to appoint leaders, but you go, but this is different. They're a good person. And you didn't give them a chance to actually prove their competency. It's not their willingness.
No.
It's their competency in the role. And so you end up double working, doing their job for them and doing your job.
Mm.
Recipe for burnout.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It's because I think as we want to, I don't know. We want to rewarding people. We want to promote people, reward people, and then we've got some person who shouldn't be doing what they're doing.
What about when they think that they should be doing it?
Everybody thinks they can run a church, though, don't they?
Of course. But if you got somebody who comes to you and they're a good person and say, hey, I've got a passion for this, and your gut says, I'm not sure they've got what it takes to do it, but they really want to do it, that's hard.
Oh, really hard. You know, you want to –
because
really
you want to believe
hard.
In people. You want to be able to – the whole idea of this is to give it away, right, to give the ministry away. And your gut says, don't do it. But
well, that's right. You have to go on what your gut says, right, because your gut's actually more correct. It's what Malcolm Gladwell says, the blink, the power of the blink, that you know more in the time it takes to blink than you do doing a PhD in biblical studies, right? You feel it with – you know, if someone says, hey, I want to run a mercy ministry – do a food bank thing, right? Well, it sounds the intention's great. Food bank, who doesn't want to have a food bank and feed the poor and the struggling, right? Yeah. And so you feel doubly bad because you think, it's very hard to think of an excuse because what you're saying is you're really saying my gut doesn't respond to it the way it should respond to it. But because I mean, that's a tester for them, because they're going to, a person who's not a disciple is going to equate that as rejection.
Mm. Have you had that happen?
Oh, loads of times. Yeah. Loads of times.
What did you do? Did you get it right?
Oh, gee, I think you've
got it. Or have you done both? And
yeah, I've done both. I've promoted people.
Yeah.
Promoted guys onto eldership that should never have been on eldership. And then turn people away with good ideas.
Hmm.
It's very – to be a senior pastor of a church or even a pastor, you have to be strong in who you – what you feel. You know, but you could – and you can't just be – if you – like I like to please people, and so it's always painful displeasing people. But wanting to please people is part of your pastoral superpower, right?
Yeah.
And that you're a likable person. And so it pains you to not be liked. But that's the cost. That's part of picking up your cross, isn't it?
It's also complicated in the church environment. Like if we talk business for a second, if you appoint somebody and they're incompetent, you know, often you appoint somebody that you don't know even.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? You put an ad in the paper, ad on Seek, hey, get this person in, they apply for a position. If they're incompetent, it's still painful to have to let somebody go, to disappoint them if they think they're good at the job even. But in a church environment, the thing that is probably the most difficult is that this person, this is their church. This is not just their workplace, or this is not just they're not just their expression of leadership. This is their church family. And if you have to demote somebody or remove somebody from a position, really difficult.
So difficult that most people leave the church.
Mm.
You know, in actual fact, it would be far better to not have promoted a lot of people, because then they'd still be in the church rather than promote them. Then they feel too embarrassed, too mad or too embarrassed, you know, or every time they see you, they're seeing, you know, someone who's like an enemy to them. So it's an opportunity to mature, but we live in an age where people live a fairly shallow relationship with God, and the expectation is too much for them.
Yeah. So what we're saying is trust your gut.
Yeah, trust your gut, and then say it in a nice way. But then I've had to dismiss people. What I've tried to do in my latter years was try to think, God, where do you actually want this person? Like, God, tell me what's a better fit for them. And then go to them saying, listen, I really believe this is from God. This is a better fit for you.
Mm.
And so we want you to have a date to finish with, right?
I think there's also a track, and I've heard Pastor Ash talk about this before too, where he talks about this reality where be super clear and upfront with people straight away. So if someone comes to you and they're sort of, maybe they're not asking for a job, but they're posturing for a job. You know, those people where they're not asking you they want to preach on the platform, or they're not asking you that they want to run a department, or they're not asked, but you know that they are asking you, they're positioning themselves in such a way, and you have a gut feel going, this person's not the right person for that job. Then be really clear with them. Hey, you know, this is not the direction that you can do that for this season, but you're not the person that I'm looking to do this long term. I've got another plan for you. So be really clear and upfront with them at the beginning, and set, like, I've already got a vision for that area, or I've already got a thought for that area. I already know what I'm going to do next, even if you're not necessarily sure exactly what you're going to do next. You just know it's not that.
Mm.
So be clear. Hey, I don't think you're the person to do this long term, but hey, in the meantime, as long as you're clear, as long as you know, you can fill your boots, mate.
Yeah, that's good. And also that's a cross for them to bear. They think, well, door's shut, right? So that's a part of the testings of God.
Mm.
To the testings of faith.
Yeah.
If they pass that test, then other doors open.
It's good.
Okay, here's my second one. Promoting people who feel like you're getting in the way of their success and their promotion.
Say that again.
Promoting people who feel like you're micromanaging them. Feel like you're, because I've had people who have felt like I'm micromanaging. And in one respect, I'm there.
You might have been.
Yeah, micromanaging. But so they start to dislike, say, hey, push back a bit, right?
Hmm.
So then I've pushed back a bit, and then because they felt I'm getting in the way, their way, right? So I've pushed back, given them freedom, but the freedom's ended in disaster.
Hmm.
You know, because they're dealing partly or largely out of ego, rather than out of a sonship spirit.
So the question is, why are they pushing you back? I think it's interesting that micromanagement, and I'm not a micromanager, but I've worked with them, and I don't understand the negativity sometimes that comes on micromanagement. I think if you're completely being squashed, well, then find another lane for yourself. But ultimately, micromanagement, it gets a bad rap. It's not a negative word. You think about it just as a term. It's not good, bad, evil, ugly, satanic, you know. But it does get a bad rap. And I think ultimately, if that person who's trying to micro, if I had someone trying to micromanage me, well, okay, what's my role? How do I hold myself in the process? Is a healthy discipleship thought. So if someone's pushing you away, if you're trying to help that person, you're trying to bring wisdom to them, you're trying to lead them. I think as pastors, we should sometimes delegation is a word that we transpose in for laziness.
Yeah.
So as a leader, I've delegated that to them, and I'll tell our team here, if you're delegating something to somebody, prepare yourself for double the work.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you've got to delegate it to them, and you've got to train them and hold their hand while they do it, and then you've got to double check back in with them to make sure they're doing it. So delegation is not a release of work. It's a creator of work. Now, over time,
brilliant.
You know, over time, you hope that we can scale this thing up. But in the short to medium term, delegation is a lot of work. And so there's seasons where sometimes you're better off to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're better off to keep it the team small. You know, some people say healthy things grow. Okay, you were so unhealthy things. Cancer grows.
Everything grows, yeah.
Like and it's unhealthy. Yeah. You know, so growth isn't necessarily the goal.
No.
You know, healthy growth is the goal.
Yeah.
And sustainable growth is the goal. And if someone's pushing back on you, you got to ask yourself why. That's a red flag, isn't it?
It's a red flag because I've learned my lesson over ego, in that whenever ego rears its head, you've lost the game. Because I think it's an odd example, this, but there's a difference between smoking behind the shed and then picking up some chewing gum to cover up the fact you've been smoking, and smoking in the church foyer.
I don't smoke.
No. But to be overt with sin is completely different to being embarrassed by sin.
Yeah. Because a lot of people are struggling and don't want to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that if someone's in a more public role, like in an office like this, right? If someone gets moody, they've actually taken a private emotion of rejection or emotion or mood, a private moodiness, into the public realm.
Yep.
And I would say that that's like smoking in public, you know. Say you want to go to that person and say, "Hey,
we don't do that.
We don't do that. You go out, walk out the building, come back in a pleasant mood. Thank you very much," right? Because we put up with stuff that is overt sin.
Yeah.
And I think that ego's like that, you know. And I think that once you see it, I've gone silent on it in the past. But I think in the future, I would go straight to it and say, "Hey, there's got to be an example of it, right?"
Yep.
But when you're in this situation, I don't want you promoting yourself in this situation. We want to be seen as promoters of other people. So could you say sorry to that person for doing that, you know? Or I've noticed that you're on the roster. Notice that you're the principal singer on the roster 2 out of 3 weeks. I want you to change that and make that every second week. I think if you don't deal with it, ego never sorts itself out.
No, it doesn't.
It drags people into its black hole.
Unaddressed, it grows.
It grows, yes. Yeah. So I'd say that's a universal error of pastors. Ego wants space. Ego complains of being micromanaged. Ego wants more freedom, wants more budget. Ego is competitive with other departments. Ego, you know.
Yep, 100%. Ooh, that's good.
Number three being commitment-led, not vision-led. I think someone said that commitment's the child of vision. Vision's the mother. And if you want to get more commitment, I say this in preaching masterclasses. Don't preach on prayer. Preach on breakthrough, because breakthrough is the vision. Prayer's the commitment. And so if you're preaching on prayer, people think, because everyone's got an image of what prayer is anyway, right? So you're putting the work ethic first. Don't do that. Put the vision first. And put the horse first, the cart second. And I think when you're building a church, it's easy to make your sermons commitment led. Hey, guys, not enough people are praying, not enough people are giving, right? So here's four ways to give, right? Instead of starting with the horse, right?
Yeah.
Here's the vision. The vision is financial breakthrough. And here's some testimonies. And here's what God does. Here's the wisdom of God. Here's the nature of God, right? Here's the way we're going to do it. We're going to do it through generosity.
So lead through inspiration.
It's inspiration, yes. And yeah. I think that and also culture-wise in the church, I've had a lot of kickback in the past because if you're trying to make changes in church, I'll give you an example, right? If you're trying to raise up young adults, just say the church hasn't got many young adults, trying to raise up young adults, right? And just say the you want to pick on visual areas in the church to promote it, right? Which is standard leadership. So you want your band to be a bit younger.
Yep.
You want your stewards to be a
reflect
bit younger,
that
right? So but it can be that the guy who's now in charge of the band goes to the bass guitarist, hey, you're too old, mate.
Yeah.
Right? We need a younger person. So he swapped over for a younger person, right? So now it's all been led by commitment and led by instruction, not led by vision.
Mm.
So the biggest mistake I've made is I've thought that vision's in the air when it's not. Vision's like glass. It goes cold very easily, right? And then it's replaced by the concrete of instruction. And so I've got to keep.
Hey, don't go far. Don't go past that too quickly. Say that again.
Because concrete keeps its heat, right?
Vision is like glass.
It just loses heat really easily. That's why you have to be on it all the time to keep heating up the glass, right?
Often I'd put it like culture or vision is a leaky bucket.
Oh, that's it. Vision's a leak.
You've just got to keep putting it in the top, else if you stop it, it's going to leak out the holes and then you're going to be dealing with empty buckets.
Absolutely.
Once you've got an empty bucket, now everyone's getting dehydrated.
Yep, absolutely. So with young adults, if you said to the band, guys, young adults, we've got no young adults, right? We need to promote young adults. And there's a number coming in, right? We need to get them quickly involved. Would you be okay with just sitting out for a little bit more? And let's promote some more young adults, right? Because the vision is that we want a multi-generational church, right? But you have to say that all the time. If you fail to say it just for a month, then that bass guitarist who is going to get rejected.
Rejected, yeah, that's right.
So I think that, and because we're slaves in essence, in that we're children of dust before we're children of diamond, right? We're from the dust of the earth. Our dust in the shows through, and that we slant more towards slavishness than sonship. And you can tell that by everyone's preaching.
It's just good.
Their preaching's more slavish preaching rather than sonship preaching. And
it's a slant rather than a topic.
It's not a
particular topic. No. It's not a particular a scripture type. You've got to stay in faith for yourself. I think, you know, you talked earlier about faithful people. As a leader, I can look at my own life and go, oh yeah, I'm faithful because I keep rocking up. I'm faithful because I'm there. I'm in the trenches. But to be faithful is not just to be consistent. It's to be full of faith.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So to be faithful is not just to rock up and do the job. It's to actually see through the eyes and of faith, see through vision, and be able to keep staying there yourself. If you're struggling, then there ain't nobody pouring it in the top of the bucket.
No, and also if you are a preacher, you preach on how to open the treasuries of heaven.
Mm.
It's by faith that we enter into grace, which is the goodness of God.
So good.
And faith and faithfulness sleep together.
Yeah.
So then you can do five ways to be more faithful. But in that way, you're not just thinking, oh, there's a bunch of losers here. Let's preach on faithfulness because you're so inconsistent after COVID. Let's preach on faithfulness. So you do a whole series on faithfulness. It sounds godly, but it's not as godly as it sounds because it's coming from dustiness.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's number four. Thinking that people love you more than
they actually do,
yep. And that you love them more than you actually do.
Yeah.
I think we've replaced agape love for filio love. And I think that we've brought in the BFF thing, right? We're looking for best friends forever. And we've got this big sign saying, welcome home.
Mm.
And we're saying, hey guys, we're a family until you leave. And then we're no longer family, right? I just think that we've almost said it, we've almost skewed it from fellowship. I don't know, what's your thoughts?
Fellowship is such a massive word because it sounds old. It sounds like something from the 20th century,
yep.
Or it sounds like something the 1950s, where we'd have fellowship and we'd have potluck dinners,
yes.
And we'd have, but actually, fellowship is one of the richest Greek words that is used throughout the New Testament. The word koinonia, it talks about like kingdom partnership in a unity around the scriptures, a unity in task, and a financial partnership. All of those things actually come under the word fellowship. And so we talk about, oh yeah, it's a family. The church is a family, but there's got to be fellowship. Fellowship is intentional. Fellowship is not accidental. I like you, friends. One of the things we do here, we tell it when we're connecting people, when we're talking to people, we say, hey, introduce people to somebody that they know or are like. Right. Do you know what I mean? So you make three types of connections.
Yeah.
Somebody that they like. Connect them to a pastor, whether it's senior pastor, lead pastor, somebody pastoral care team, so they've got a connection with what's going on in the leadership, and then try to connect them to somebody who they don't normally hang around.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
If you've got all three of those connections in the church, and I think about that for yourself as a leader, as a person who is wanting responsibility, what am I doing? Am I just connecting with the clique of the people that I like and I hang around with on a Sunday, or am I actually in partnership with people that I would not hang out with?
Yeah, that's
if
right.
It wasn't for the unity in Christ, if it wasn't for the church, I wouldn't be with you. I wouldn't be with you. I wouldn't hang out with you otherwise. And it's not a slight to say that. It's a recognition that rich, poor, black, white, Jew, Gentile, we're all one in Christ.
Yeah.
But we're one in Christ. We're not one because we're buddies and I like you.
No, that's right. I think the statement, we're the family of God, it makes more sense when you meet somebody, if you say walking through the streets of Bangladesh and you see someone wearing a cross on a T-shirt, right? And you go up to them, say, oh, you're a Christian. You give each other a hug. I think that's the sense that we're a part of the family of God together. I think, once you make that, bring it down to a local church. We are family, but it's I don't know. I just think that we've people overexpect, people who feel like, oh, I've come from a broken family. This is the real family.
Yeah.
And then you let them down.
Well, then they get hurt by somebody.
Yeah.
They get asked to do something they're not comfortable doing. They're like, well, that's not what, I don't like that. So it's not about good feels.
Yeah.
It's good fellowship.
Yeah, it's just people's, I don't know. It's just.
I think there's a thing too where, again, as a, I'm a bit of a hyper relationship kind of person. I'm not extroverted, but I love people. I love being around people, and it doesn't always give me energy. But there's a sense where that's my purpose. I want to be there to help them. And you can, I have made the mistakes in the past of pastoring through being people's friends, and I can not manipulate, but I can use the strength of that friendship and the strength of that personal respect, if you like, to leverage kingdom purpose.
Yeah.
And that's not bad, wrong, or evil, but it's got a life. Mm. You can't do that through every season of life, because then you limit the ability to grow anything, to scale anything, because you lead in such a way that's only got the, I've got to spend hours and days and months and years building those relationships before we can ever get anywhere with them.
Mm.
But people have got to come to a place where they recognize there's a mission of the church.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Like, go. Wait for the Holy Spirit
and
then go. Don't wait for the pastor to give you 15 phone calls and come visit you and have dinner with you 16 times and love on your kids every week. Yeah, as a pastor, do that stuff. But understand that our calling is to activate people into the mission of God.
Yeah, that's right. That's just more. It's more mature than generally we're seeing around about the place. And people have their securities in Christ, and that takes growth, right, for that to happen. But we're looking for a more mature church. I'm not into the BFF stuff, right? And also, once you start the BFF thing going, right, then people that really need incorporating the church culture, which is your older single people, and including widows and that. And it's also your people with same-sex attraction who have decided to be celibate, right? Mm. So that's the cross they're picking up to follow Christ, right? So you, at the moment, if you say our church is a family church, well, you're talking about the nuclear family here. Or if you're not, let's extend it And let's make sure that that on Sunday lunch that you actually bring a late single person or bring
it's interesting, isn't it?
Somebody, you know, because you've got because say a late single person really is picking up their cross to follow Christ because they're sacrificing through either sovereignty of God or sacrificing through keeping a good attitude through singleness. And then someone who's same-sex attracted
who have that family
decided to live a single life, a celibate life, right? That's picking up their cross to follow Christ. But if everyone else is in philia love and this only a few people are in agape love, the whole basis of the church is agape love from which philia love trails again like a horse with a cart. But it doesn't start with filio. It starts with agape. And I think you know, we've got problems when you put filio ahead of.
Very good.
Okay, so number five is, and we'll do this really quickly, right? Because number five is thinking that everything's forever. You know, people think that everything's forever when everything's not forever.
I don't know if you've seen the clip. It floats around social media of Tom Hanks. And I'm not a Tom Hanks fan necessarily, but he's talking to it looks like a table of men just sitting around. And he says, you know, if you're on top of the world and everyone's celebrating you and everything is amazing in your life, he pauses. This too will pass. You know, if you're at the bottom of the valley.
That's Tom Hanks' brother, I think, Steve Hanks.
Oh, is it?
I think it is, okay. Yes. Steve Hanks is quite cynical, yeah, right? But it's the type of thing.
There he goes, if you're at the bottom of the valley, everyone's abandoned you, the world is dumping on you, like – this too shall pass.
Brilliant.
You know, if you're walking through the muck of nappies, changing young, like this too shall pass. What a beautiful revelation. No,
it's brilliant. Okay, here's number six, right? Not recognizing flattery. Flattery is a sin that never gets called out. Same with cowardice is a sin that never gets called out, right? Immorality, smoking, drugs, they all get called out, right? But cowardice is the sin, which is the sin of fear. And it's the sin of the opposite of courage, the opposite of faith, right? But it never gets called out in church culture, right? But flattery is also another sin that never gets called out. But
flattery is a shocker. Yeah.
Just what do you think?
So I think it's Romans 15, and I haven't got time to check it, but it talks about division comes through flattering words and persuasive speech.
Oh, gee.
So flattery. And what's interesting is, again, we've talked about my relationship with Ash as senior pastor, lead pastor here at Life Church. It's been really interesting, right, because we're trying to build a generational church across, you know, leadership from senior right down to kids. And so naturally what happens is certain demographics of that church connect more with one particular person than another person.
Yeah.
And they don't mean to be divisive, but some people walk up to you and go, oh, I really love your preaching.
Oh, brilliant. Yes. And it's easy for you to fall into their arms, isn't it?
I love it when you, I love it when you preach.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's it. Flattery. That's flattery.
Right. And so immediately I recognize that as a vice of the devil.
Oh, gee.
And I go, isn't it amazing? I'll say this to people all the time. Isn't it amazing the team of pastors that we have in this church? The variety of different styles of preaching.
Yeah.
I said, because if you connect with this person, the next person connects with that person, and this person connects with that person. And I'm not of Apollos. I'm not of Paul.
Gee, that's good.
I'm not of anybody.
No, that's
this is the church of Jesus Christ.
That was the original flattery, wasn't it?
And I think that's where Paul said, he says, division comes through persuasive speech, flattering words and persuasive speech. Yeah. And so the most dangerous people in the church are not the people that are directly, overtly, visibly against you. Rather, they're the people that are trying to get close to you.
Brilliant.
Holding you, gently supporting you, encouraging you. Pastor Ash tells a story of a church that he was in many, many, many years ago, well before he was ever here on the Sunshine Coast. And his time there was coming to an end. And so he had designed to resign from that church. And there were people in the church who didn't understand it. And they came to him and said, hey, Ash, there's a couple of hundred people. We'd, you know, if you started a church down the road,
wow,
we'd come with you. And again, he recognized that as the voice of the enemy, shut it down. And like, you know, I think he even said, like, get behind me, Satan, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's so clearly evil.
Yeah.
Because the intention is not to actually encourage you. Because encouragement is vital. Encouragement is important. But flattery just trying to draw that person to yourself.
Brilliant.
For personal needs.
Brilliant. And that's the root of the Absalom spirit.
Yeah.
The Absalom spirit tries to draw the attention back to you, create a bond between. And I you know, I've seen the Absalom spirit in terrible ways in ministry, how someone who should be an uncle turns out giving lollies and sweets to people to get their bond, and then they're deliberately trying to rebalance the power.
It's a manipulation of power, and that's why I think Paul calls it division.
Brilliant. Okay, here's the next one, right? This is number six, and that is ignoring the quiet achievers. You know, we always go for the squeaky wheel, and also we love wild cards. Oh, look what I can do with a wild card, right? So they end up using up 60% of the attention, just three wild cards that you thought, I'll give them a go.
Yeah.
But the quiet achiever, which is the kingdom's built on, the quiet achiever,
yes, it
just
is.
Gets ignored.
Mm.
It's a common mistake, isn't it?
I think the squeaky wheel does get the oil, right? And so if something's squeaking, if something's shiny, it naturally gets the attention. I think as a pastor, as a leader, it's about recognizing what's not just got potential. See, we celebrate potential. I think potential is really poisonous at a certain age, though. You think about someone who's a teenager in their early 20s and you go, you got so much potential, man. You're amazing. You got these gifts in your life. If they're 45 and you're still saying, man, you got so much potential, that same statement is now a knock on them. At 45, if you haven't achieved anything and you've got potential, what have you been doing for the last two decades? You know, and so I think you got to recognize what actually is valuable.
Yeah,
we talk about here one of our values, and we've been talking about some, you know, refining some of our church values and re-communicating them to the life of the church. And one of the ones that we kind of settled on was we celebrate a culture of honor.
Yeah,
so we don't just build one, but we celebrate it.
Oh, brilliant.
And I think that word was in the conversations that we had around the table was really important, because it wasn't just that we like it or but we want to celebrate, you know, that which is honorable.
Brilliant.
Not just that which is shiny or that which is, you know, exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, here's the next one, right? Knowing when to begin something. This is probably knowing that not everything's forever, but when to begin and when to end, when to start, when to finish, right? It seems to be people fail to start things that should be started because they've got a fear of failure, and they fail to end things that are way past their sell-by date.
I've got a respect for people who can end stuff because I know that's a weakness of mine.
Oh, gee.
I've got no issue starting things. I've got no issue taking some risk. I think I've been brought up in a pretty – in a healthy, safe environment, ministry-wise and family-wise, all those sort of things. So I've never felt like if I make a mistake, I'm going to crash and burn and die and end up on the fringe of society.
Yeah.
But ending things is, I don't know, I think it's ahead of me. How do you know?
How do you know? It's like a prayer meeting that's been going on every Thursday morning at 6 a.m.
And if you shut it down, people leave the church.
Yeah.
So were you right in doing that?
Yeah.
It's hard, right? Because what's the fruit of the right decision at that point?
Yes, and also with prayer, say, you can't tell what the fruit is. Because the connection between prayer and fruit is there's quite a things in between prayer and fruit.
Crazy. How do you know though? If you're called to shut something down, how do you know in hindsight that you made the right decision?
Mm.
Do you look at shutting down through the lens of pruning? I mean, you're the one with 30 plus years experience here, Dave.
You're trying to prune, but it shouldn't. I think sometimes if you do shut something down, but you need to start it up again, just start it up again. You know, there needs to be a degree of flexibility in the church, but there isn't, but there needs to be, doesn't there? I will shut it down and I'll trust in God because that's the gift that I've got. Oh, look, he's starting it up again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'd say. Here's number nine, right? And that's driving things faster than they should be. So this is about momentum and pace, right? I would say, I remember we got this drummer from who did the European tour of Duran Duran in our church, right? And phenomenal drummer.
For all our younger listeners.
No, they all know Duran Duran because they all know the Beatles. Come on.
Do they?
Yeah, they all listen.
I'm only just there, mate, in my 40s.
I know, but I was amazed. Not that I was at Harry Styles' concert, but
Duran Duran,
they were
big
singing,
band.
But all the 15-year-olds were singing all the words to Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, that's a 50-year-old song, right?
Yeah, that's Queen, though.
Yes.
Queen was much bigger than Duran Duran.
Yes, but Duran Duran are still legends, right? But anyway, we had the drummer, so I stuck them on. He's drumming away, doing a great job, right?
Then he Epic start, drummer.
Yeah, then he starts sleeping with someone that he shouldn't be sleeping with, right? So he has to be taken off the drums because he's now a bad example, right? And then a storm erupts. Eventually he leads the church, right? But that's me thinking, me trying to make the church go faster because I should have just had congos then or that Cajun thing, right?
But Sister Mary with a tambourine.
Yeah, that's what I should have left at that, but I wanted the church to be faster.
Yeah.
And I think that pacing is really important. I often say that the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, each temptation was to go faster than he should have done because he was about to eat, say, in 20 days' time. Mm, Satan said, you can eat now, right? So it's trying to speed things up. And a lot of, say, sexual temptation is once they get married, they'll have sex, right? But the temptation is to have before it's due time.
It's always the temptation, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think in church life, you see other churches do have a huge children's outreach. Oh, we need that once a month.
Yeah.
You know, food trucks everywhere. We need that once a month. You know, and eventually you've made the church that's, say, 5 years old doing what it could only do at 10 years old. So then you drive the church bankrupt.
It is interesting to talk about you say too fast to speed, but it is the spirit of comparison.
Mm.
Ultimately, it's not even a temptation to make things happen quickly. It's to look across the fence and to see that the grass is greener, and recognize, or you're not recognizing anything, but just to be tempted to compare your journey to somebody else's journey.
Yes,
and I think ultimately, what is the purpose of the church? You know, it's not growth at all costs.
No.
If this becomes growth at all costs, then growth becomes God.
Mm.
And, you know, has that happened a little bit in some places? Perhaps.
Mm.
You know, growth was the God, even though it wasn't mentioned in the worship songs or in the preaching necessarily.
Still the God, isn't it?
When it comes to crunch and decision-making about what you will or you won't do or, you know, instigate, you know, again, I've had the privilege of sitting with Ash in much of the decision-making processes over the last 10 years, and there's been moments where I would have made certain decisions. If he wasn't there, I probably would have made certain decisions.
Mm.
And the wisdom of somebody who's been there before you and says, nah, we don't need to do that.
Gee whiz.
What do you mean? Like, that would be a good thing, right?
Mm.
Because speed, even if it's not going to make your church go faster, sometimes it's not even about the speed. Sometimes it's about this is going to be good for our church.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's not in the prophetic unction of our church. This is not in our God story. This is good.
Yeah,
but it's not necessarily in the God narrative.
Yeah,
it's not even necessarily. It may never be in our God narrative.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? We were talking about something only a few weeks ago. And somebody else on our team sort of suggested this idea, hey, we could do this. And it was a really good idea.
Mm.
And somebody else on the team just said, oh, and somebody who's more senior leadership than them said, I just don't have a piece about it. I know it's a good thing. And in fact, we've even done it before.
Mm.
But it's not right for now. Right.
Yes.
And the ability to just touch the brakes.
Yeah.
Even if you don't stop the idea, but just to touch the brakes and assess the church through the prophetic gift.
Mm.
And to be able to go, not just see what happens if you do that, but go back to vision. You talked before about leading through vision, not through commitment.
Mm.
Like, what's the vision of this place? What's the God story? What's this? Where's this going to lead us?
Mm.
And is that the flavor that we want? It's not about big, small, it's not that black and white.
Yeah, no.
It's the what has God called our church to be in this city?
Yeah, that's brilliant. In this city, absolutely.
Right. So on the Sunshine Coast here, there's a lot of great Pentecostal churches. You're on on the Gold Coast, and there's a lot of great Pentecostal churches. But what is our church called to be? Yeah, you know, and we've seen, you know, photocopy churches, we've seen people replicate things that are not bad things, they're good things, but if it's not sustainable and if it's not their gift, it's not their lane, is that what God actually called them to do? It's social media era.
Yeah, that's right. Comparison. It is. Yeah,
I just think it comes back to comparison more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Even say social media, having a photographer, you can be photographing stuff that just no need for that.
I'm all for people. I mean, we've taken things and absorbed them from other places and put them into practice. Mm. I think it's funny when I've seen other people do what we do and we've taken it from somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? And then you notice someone else is copying you and you think, oh, it's third hand now. You know, it's clearly come from your church.
Gee.
And, you know, that in some ways that's just influence at whatever level you've got it. But I think, you've got to have a God story for your own ministry.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
You've got to have clarity around what it is God's called you to do in your city in the way. And that's not an arrogant – don't isolate yourself in that.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a reason to go, well, I'm not called to it. I don't have the resource, so I'm going to do this and do it out of a spirit of – you know, you can actually be you out of a spirit of rebellion.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Or you can be you out of a spirit of submission to Christ and the plan that he has for you.
Gee, that's a great point. That's a proper ministry point, that, to people listening.
Mm.
You know, because the comparison thing, social media, so-and-so's got an LCD screen, I need an LCD, that kind of thing. It can actually ruin the vibe that's already there.
Yeah.
Because you're striving with the church.
That's a really super practical example. I think we're the first church on the coast to get a big LED wall. Mm. And, you know, the team, I and the team at the time, wasn't just an idea of getting the money to buy the screen because, you know, they're not cheap, but it was the amount of work that had to go in from a tech position to learn how to use the sucker.
Oh, yeah.
And to set the computers up in such a way to do it. And you know, it was back in the days when I was not lead pastoring. I was still, you know, very much hands on the ground in the creative ministries and all that sort of thing. And I had to go on a month journey of internet dark holes of trying to work out how things went together and what cards go with which and how do you build the pit, because no one had done it. So then we get it, right? And then over the next 3, 4, 5 years, people are walking through and go, oh, man, we want to get one of those. And then so I go and talk to Rick. You know, he worked there, had to do all that. And people come to me and go, oh, we've got the money to buy this. How can we do it? I'm like, don't do it. You might have the money. You don't have the tech team.
No.
It's going to kill you.
No.
Like, and I'm not coming to help because I've done it once. So I don't have to do it again. You know, like, it's insane.
Oh, is it easier now? Has someone invented a system that's easier?
It's still not easy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're not a church with a big tech department who can have nerdy guys that are running around doing it, you know, and I'm famously the nerd of our church now, thanks to you, speaking from our platform. Calling me a nerd in front of the entire church several times. And I've owned it. I'm good with it. But I've said to people flat out, just don't do it.
Yeah.
It will actually damage your church because you'd get it, then you wouldn't have the content to use it.
Yeah.
It's comparison. And not all comparison is bad comparison. But I think insecure comparison is really, really dangerous.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. Here's my last thing is ignoring prayer. In that you do, it's easy. Again, prayer goes cold pretty quickly, and I'm not a prayer guru, right? Because I think prayer's been sabotaged by the intercessors, right? They've almost made something hugely stormy out of it, mighty out of it, right? I'm more prayers like a Fiat 500, right? Let's just get in it, and we're not going to go. We're not going to go super fast, but we'll get to Brisbane, right? We'll get to
down the road somewhere
where we're going, right? So I'm more that, but it's easy to go it alone without the Fiat 500. I just think that I could have done with more people praying for me, and for me praying more for other people.
Mm. It's funny how prayer is not necessarily we might start our prayer if you're a bit dry in the prayer world, in the prayer area of your life or your leadership. You'll tend to start praying for things that you need.
Yeah.
You'll start praying for breakthroughs. And I've found in my life anyway, whenever I've gone, you know, maybe got a little bit cold in prayer or felt like I'd just drifted a little bit, you know, the Spirit of God brings you back. And he doesn't bring you back for a one-off prayer. He brings you back to the prayer journey.
Oh, brilliant.
And we all fall off that hill. Do you know what I mean? Like we come, but God doesn't say come back to pray. He says come back to prayer.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
Prayer as a lifestyle, prayer as a sitting in the word, You know, like even just meditating on the word, we forget about. Like this is a thing that's started in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, probably before that, but it's come across my radar in the last 4 or 5 years. So people are doing that 30-day shred on the Bible at the start of the year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've not even tried to do that. There's no way, Dave Gilbert. There's
no way I could do it.
There is no way I'd be able to do that. No. And the guys that do it, like, it's like 4 hours a day.
Yeah, but they're not taking it in, are they?
Well, I don't want to be judgy. I mean, maybe in some – and look, the guys that I know that have done it have said it was amazing. They picked up new narratives, like, you know, big Old Testament narratives, because you're reading like 17 books in a day, so, you know, once you get to the Minor Prophets and things like this. But I look at it and I go, the times where – I mean, I do the Bible in a year regularly. Even that for me is a stretch because I'm such a meditator on the word.
Yeah, me too.
I'll sit there – like I've been in two verses out of the book of Mark since like last Monday and I'm still there. And I've written copious amounts of notes out of it and I'm just – it's breathing new life. And I'll assess it from seven angles. I'll go, okay, this is what it means. This is what the Greek's saying. Brilliant. This is what the key words are. Let me build a new sentences out of it. And so for me, the power of scripture, the power of prayer is the time spent in it, not the speed of it. Or the number of times I've prayed. No, just live in prayer. I'm not trying to draw a distinction between praying and prayer, but I think prayer is a lifestyle, and it's a, you know, I don't want to be away from you, God. I know for me, when it comes to prayer, when it comes to the word, like meditating on the word, it's a 72-hour window for me. So if I've you know, when you're pastoring and you're busy and you're pouring into people and you're having conversation after, you know, you're trying to lead people, you're trying to pastor people, you're trying to lift them, encourage them. You know, if I'm away from a constant scripture prayer journey for more than, you know, at 72-hour mark, I'm ready to kill somebody. It's like there's a buzzer that goes off in my spirit, and the buzzer is anger. The buzzer is frustration. The buzzer is, I can't deal with this right now. I'm over this. Why don't you get this? I don't ever want to live in that place.
No.
Yet it's not even a temptation to go there. It just happens automatically when I'm not first sitting in that bed. You know, it might be two or three busy mornings in a row where I didn't get the hour with God that I would like. And it kills you because you don't pay for it. When you walk out the door and go to your first appointment, you pay for it 2 days later. Brilliant. When you snap at somebody.
Brilliant.
And so prayer for me is the journey of prayer rather than praying as an activity. Brilliant. That's me.
That's excellent.
You didn't say anything about that.
Oh, no. I no, but I do, as I said, I would have done better if people had been praying for me.
Yeah.
I think I've appeared too independent and appeared like I haven't really needed it. With me, because you can look like that.
Because if you look strong, people don't think you need it.
No, exactly. If you cry a lot,
you should. Number 11, like the temptation to look strong in ministry.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't want to look weak.
No, but
if you are strong, I remember. Okay, this is not number 11. Yep. We need to wrap this up. But I still remember there was a day, and I have to use local examples because that's all I got. But Ash was preaching from the platform and he said, you know, or emceeing or something in one of our services. And he was referring to me and he goes, you know, Rick's strong now, but one day he won't be.
Oh, wow.
You know, and he was not having a shot at me. He was talking about himself. You know, I've been strong and then, you know, there's seasons of life where I haven't been as strong. And then this kid's coming through. They're going to be strong, but they won't be strong forever. And so it was a sense of understanding that we can get addicted to becoming beautiful people and the celebrity culture of church and wanting to be that person who has got it all together, whose hair is right, whose clothes are spot on. We've got the right swagger and yet there's nothing cooking in the kitchen. And I just refuse to be that person because it hurts. It's too tiring.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you're more extroverted than me. It's easier for extroverts.
Well, yeah.
But I could never pull that shirt off. Do you know what I'm saying? No.
You can give it a go.
I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I'm partially autistic, right? So I'm tunnel visioned, right?
Mm.
And so I'm not your fully balanced person, you know. So in that way, I'm quite particular, and because it's a, just call it a species of people that it's, you know, like people with orange hair or people who with anyway,
uncontroversial.
Yes, yes.
Keep it straight.
I just think that there's general lack of understanding with people that are a bit autistic, right? And also there's a, because you're wired differently, people stand a little bit away from you because they don't quite get you.
Interesting.
You
know?
So I think that's partly. It's autism is always, usually it's accompanied by genius, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's accompanied, like Elon Musk, right? You by an awkwardness.
Yeah.
You with me? And yeah. I think that follows me a little bit. And, but you know, you can compensate for it. Now I'm aware that I need to pray for people. I need to ask people to pray for me.
Yeah. It is a temptation, isn't it? He who isolates himself rages against all good judgment.
Yeah.
God gave me that scripture for a situation I was walking through recently about somebody else. And that was just a word for them. And I was like, why is this person like this?
Mm.
What's going on? And literally this verse drops in. And then it actually goes on to say a fool doesn't want to understand. All they want to do is hear their own opinion. Yeah. And I went, that comes from, you know, dying from your own opinion comes from isolating yourself in the first place.
Yeah.
And not submitting yourself to the room.
Mm. Yeah.
To the ecclesia, apostolic table around, to the giftings that God's put in your life.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, it's brilliant.
Ten
most common errors in leadership. And I think and they're universal, right? So some people, I do that. Yeah, we all do all of them, right? And but again, if you can avoid some pitfalls, you can keep momentum going.
Mm. The 10
you know, this is to get things. Rid of the caravans that you're pulling.
Yeah, get the wind resistance down.
Yeah, that's it. But you know, leadership's a difficult task. Pastoring makes leadership even more difficult.
Mm.
You're right. You've got people who are working for you, voluntary capacity, but it's also their home.
Mm.
It's a very difficult situation, you know, and scenario. But if you're called to it, you're called to it.
I think it's the most important work in the world.
Yeah.
10 things that'll derail you.
Yeah.
Hopefully somebody listening out there in podcast land is less derailed.
Yeah.
If you could take something out of it, let us know. Put something in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Cool. Episode 4 done. See you next time.